Listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, and this is CPR, CFRC's prison radio show. We're listening to some music by Tony Allen, Elowen Poe. We play that every week at the top of the hour for our prison radio program. Who are we? What do we do? Well, we air every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. EST right here on CFRC, unless we have been preempted for some reason. We broadcast across the Kingston area and worldwide at http://cfrc.ca, or, you know, it's not 2016, I guess you can just search cfrc.ca online. Our signal extends to Brockville, Belleville, Smith Falls, and across Lake Ontario to Watertown, New York. Our program, for those who don't listen, features news, interviews, writing, and documentaries about prisoners and prison issues. The content is produced by CFRC volunteers, but we also collect it from across the planet. We'll be playing some content from the United States coming up in the next few minutes because of some very important events going on there. And I should note, the last Wednesday of each month, CPR features Calls from Home, where we share letters, emails, voice messages, and music requests to and for prisoners and their loved ones. Our radio signal carries to the following institutions, mostly Millhaven Institution, Collins Bay, Joyceville, Bath, Frontenac, Pittsburgh, which are now the, Joyceville and Collins Bay minimum. We've been told that it's a little hard to get it at some of these institutions due to the buildings themselves, and because Cogeco is no longer the cable provider, Bell is, and we don't have the ability to get on that just yet. We're going to keep working on it. Now, if you are listening and capable of listening, if you are living in Kingston and have family members behind bars, you want to send them out a song or a message, or you are behind bars in Kingston and you want to get a hold of us, the best way to do it is to write us, really. We love getting poetry, essays, letters, or other content. So you can write us by snail mail, or for people across the planet, you know, regular mail, CPR, care of CFRC. We're in Lower Carruthers Hall here at Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario, and the postal code, that's the key thing, Kareem 7 Leonard 3 N for Nancy 6, that's K7L 3 N 6 in Lower Carruthers Hall. Just write it to CFRC, CPR, Calls from Home. You can also email us, should you have access to the internet, at CFRC Prison Radio, all one word, at riseup.net. And you can also try to phone us. 533-2372 is a request line. That is what we open up during calls from home. You can also try phoning us at 533-2121, which is our office line, and leaving a message. We are going to try to get our toll-free number up and going as soon as possible again, so that you can hear and phone in that way, because we know that it's very difficult to phone these 533 numbers from an institution. We have had some contributors like Zara in the past who haven't been able to get a hold of us because of that reason. So we're sorry for that. You can also join our Facebook group, Calls from Home, and provide requests or messages that way. Now, today we're going to be playing some content and follow-up from a story we reported on 2 weeks ago when I had Rico on here. He'll be back again, as well as some other guests and new people. But we were talking about the lead-up to the September 9th prison strike planning going on in the United States of America. It has happened, and it has had rallies and events, all sorts of things going on there, both to mark the 45th anniversary of the Attica State prison uprising, one of the most important prison uprisings in the world, in history, but also to continue to protest unpaid labor, coercive labor, and slavery, essentially, specifically referring to the American 14th Amendment, in which slavery is abolished, except for forced servitude or if the person is undergoing a sentence. That has not been repealed. It still exists. It is still part of the law of the land in the United States. Canada, a little different, but certainly many of the issues that prisoners are struggling with in the United States, overcrowding, lack of resources, systemic racism, forced labor, no access to facilities, for-profit prisons, which whether they're for the state or private industry, doesn't really matter at the end of it. Those are relevant in Canada, too. And I don't think we should forget that by pretending and pointing to the United States and saying, oh, well, they're so much worse than we are. I mean, in scale, perhaps, and degrees, but not without some important caveats. Anyway, we're going to actually air a piece that was sent to us by Rico that aired originally on Final Straw Radio. They're one of our American colleague station shows about prison issues. They air in North Carolina, and we're going to air their update right now here on CFRC. I'm also going to air some audio of other events and rallies that have happened across the United States in the last little while. Maybe read a few pieces on air as well about feedback and issues relating to it. So let's hear this important update on the prison strike right now here on CPR on CFRC 101.9 FM.
As many of you are probably aware, Friday, September 9th kicked off the largest and most coordinated prisoner work stoppage in the U.S. in all history, on the 45th anniversary of the Attica prison uprising. Organized in conjunction with incarcerated members of the Free Alabama Movement and the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, or IWOC, this work stoppage is turning a bright spotlight on the continuing condition of slavery in the U.S., a slavery upon which this country's economy is cripplingly dependent. Prisoners are also forced to be responsible for running the actual prisons themselves, working in the laundry, cafeteria, and so on, pretty much in any non-administrative capacity you can think of. I don't think it should go without saying that much of this labor goes unwaged, though the on-average 13 cents an hour that inmates get paid is nothing compared to the exorbitant costs of goods in prison stores. Friday kicked off the actual strike, but resistance from within prison got started well before that, with fires being set at Lincoln Correctional Center in Lincoln, Nebraska, on September 6th, a four-dormitory-wide riot at Holmes Prison in Bonifay, Florida, on the 7th, which hopped from dorm to dorm in the facility, keeping just ahead of the CO's attempts to quell the rebellion, creating a whack-a-mole-type situation that I'm sure the prison's officials just loved. Also on the 7th, inmates at the infamous military detention center Guantanamo Bay remain on hunger strike to protest their indefinite detentions, many of whom were captured as part of the xenophobic and racist governmental response to September 11th, 2001, 15 years ago today. September 9th at noon saw a complete work stoppage at Holman Correctional in Atmore, Alabama, where our comrade Michael Kimball is held captive. There are no incidents yet from prison officials, and guards and COs were forced to perform all tasks on that day. Sit-down strikes and work stoppages were also held in Bonifay, Florida, in the aforementioned Holmes Prison, amid the ashes of the fires set only 2 days prior. In Troy, Virginia, there was a work stoppage at a women's facility, and all across this state of North Carolina, prisoners refused to report to their jobs. At a women's facility in California, 10 or so brave souls refused to work and effectively shut the whole prison down because of fear of a riot from the administration. Disturbances were reported at Gulf and Mayo prisons in Florida, and 3 guards were injured in scuffles at Tecumseh Prison in Nebraska. Yesterday saw a continuation of resistance in Nebraska at a women's facility from all over South Carolina and continuing resistance in Atmore. Solidarity from overseas has been flying in fast and furious, with statements from prisoners in Greece, Australia, Lithuania, and Sweden, among many others. Repression of those who are striking has mostly consisted of prison lockdowns and targeting of people who have been designated as the ringleaders. It will be very important for people to receive solidarity from those on the outside in order for this resistance to continue. Keep your eyes on itsgoingdown.org. and the live updates at maskmagazine.com for current info and calls for backup. You can also visit the IWOC Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee at IWOC.org for a list of concrete anti-repression tactics to share with those who are incarcerated and otherwise. Now let's take a gander at some of the events we were able to find out that took place outside of the prison walls, per se, around the U.S. and around the world. A full narrative of outside support events would take a very long time, which is a good thing. So we're going to read through some highlights starting local to get the attention of the folks locally on this. We will be giving precedence to 2 local struggles in which arrests occurred. If folks from elsewhere have experience they want to share, send us an email at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net or add it to the growing list of solidarity by emailing info@itsgoingdown.org. First off, let's begin with Western North Carolina. This text is from a fundraising site to cover legal costs. Quote, in the early afternoon of September 9th, comrades held a banner outside of the Avery Mitchell Correctional Facility in Spruce Pine, North Carolina. This was an attempt to offer support to any of the 816 prisoners at the facility involved in prison functions who may have chosen to withhold their labor as part of the wider strike against prison society. 5 arrests were made and trespassing charges were issued. Later that afternoon in downtown Asheville and following a No DAPL solidarity march and protest at TD Bank, who is funding the Dakota Access Pipeline, there was a march through downtown in support of striking prisoners. 60 to 70 folks banged pots and pans, held banners and signs, passed out leaflets, and chanted, "Brick by brick, wall by wall, we will make your prisons fall," and other classics. Police followed the march, blaring requests to get out of the street, and eventually attempted to push the marchers onto the sidewalk with their vehicles. Attempts to engage the Friday night drum circle into hitting the pavement fell on deaf ears as folks made their way toward the Buncombe County Detention Facility. While passing by the local Goombay Festival, flyers were distributed and groups of folks backstage answered our chants of our passion for freedom with their own melodious note of freedom. A few minutes later and a few blocks away, 3 of ours were arrested, accused of blocking traffic, and 1 with an additional charge of resisting arrest. By midnight, the 3 were out. Everyone is out now, and no more money for bail is required, but support for legal defense, court fees, and lawyers is necessary, and we are asking for your help. At moments like these, it is so crucial that we support people doing work to sustain the struggle for racial justice and prison abolition. This allows us to create stronger movements where we can all continue to be leaders in these fields and help build a stronger sense of community, especially in the South. We are all in this together, and we need to continuously show up for each other, not just in the streets, but in ways that allow us to continue to sustain our lives and our passions for the movement. We believe that no one should go through this alone, especially marginalized folks who are brave enough to put themselves in these front lines. We are so proud of the North Carolina communities right now. End quote. You can connect to that fundraiser at actionnetwork.org/fundraising/legal-support-4-WNC-sept-9-solidarity-activists. Folks in Atlanta took the streets on Friday, September 9th, in the face of serious police repression. From atlblackcross.org comes this information. Today marks the beginning of the national prison strike. Prisoners all over the country are going on strike and refusing to cooperate with the unjust prison system. They are demanding decent pay for work, decent food for living conditions, and an end to inhumane practices like solitary confinement. In Atlanta, supporters marched through Midtown and disrupted several corporations which profit from prison slavery. Wendy's, McDonald's, Aramark, and Starbucks all got a visit. When the march got to Starbucks, police made several violent arrests, using pepper spray and slamming people to the pavement. At one point, police even tried to run marchers over with a squad car. We are working hard to make sure all the protesters get free as soon as possible so everyone can continue doing the important work of supporting the ongoing prison strike. As of this morning, Sunday, September 11th, make a wish. All defendants are out but are facing some stupidly hefty charges. One demonstrator apparently was taken during their arrest to a police precinct women's bathroom and choke slammed against the wall for being part of the cop watch in Atlanta. More on the Atlanta cases and how to support them can be found at actionnetwork.org/fundraising/bail-out-prison-strike-supporters. Rather than list all of the specific places and events that occurred around the U.S., since that laundry list might be a bit boring to listen to, besides the fact that shout-outs are fun to hear, our Kingsland, Arkansas correspondent has prepared this short presentation. If you don't hear your town name, don't fret. He's a bit old school. You can check out local actions up on itsgoingdown.org.
Listen, I've traveled every road in this here land.
Prison strike.
Everywhere, man.
Prison strike.
Everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man.
Prison strike.
Everywhere.
Solidarity actions.
Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer.
After the September 9th strike.
Everywhere, man.
Prison strike.
Everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man.
Solidarity for the September 9th prison strike.
Everywhere.
Solidarity with the prisoners.
Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, County, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Tallapoosa, Glen Rock, Black Rock, Little Rock, Oskaloosa, Tennessee, Chicopee, Spirit Lake, Grand Lake, Devil's Lake, Crater Lake, the Beach Lake.
Strike September 9th.
Everywhere, man.
After the strike.
Everywhere, man. Cross the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man.
Kick off the stuff.
Everywhere.
September 9th.
Louisville, Nashville, Knoxville, Ombabaka, Shepherdville, Jacksonville, Waterville, Coast, Arriva, Pittsfield, Springfield, Bakersfield, Shreveport, Hackensack, Cadillac, Fond du Lac, Davenport, Idaho, Jellicoe, Argentina, Diamantina, Pasadena, Catalina, Sea, Guatemala.
September 9th.
Everywhere, man.
September 9th.
Everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man.
September 9th. Prisoner-led work stoppage.
Everywhere.
September 9th.
Pittsburgh, Parkersburg, Gravelburg, Colorado, Ellensburg, Rexburg, Vicksburg, Eldorado, Larimore, Atmore, Havistaw, Chattanooga, Chaston, Nebraska, Alaska, Opelika, Baraboo, Waterloo, Kalamazoo, Kansas City, Sioux City, Cedar City, Dodge City, what a pity.
The national work stoppage that's to be undertaken by U.S. prisoners beginning September 9th.
Everywhere, man.
The September 9th national prisoner strike.
Everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I've traveled, I've had my share, man.
An upcoming nationwide convict work stoppage.
Everywhere.
The September 9th national prisoner work strike.
Everywhere.
International solidarity with the strike has been totally tremendous, with banner drops, graffiti, and actions ranging far and wide. Here are a few instances of international solidarity. This is by no means a complete list. You can see more information about this, plus photos and full statements at the aforementioned and much-favored itsgoingdown.org. In Horgos, Serbia, banner drop in support of the prison strike. In Brisbane, Australia, a solidarity action with U.S. prisoners. In Melbourne, Australia, info table with literature about U.S. prisons and the prison strike, along with collected donations. Also in Melbourne, Australia, anarchist demonstration outside the U.S. consulate. In Malmö, Sweden, a solidarity demonstration. In Athens, Greece, demonstration outside Kordialos Women's Prison. In Leipzig, Germany, rally outside the U.S. consulate. In Montreal, Canada, dinner and film screening in solidarity with prison rebellion. In Melbourne, Australia, again, noise demo at a youth detention facility. And in Barcelona, Spain, graffiti messages of support written on McDonald's, who also profits from prison labor.
For the first time in my life, I'm happy, or at least I want to be happy. And I'm not thinking about all that's happened, and I don't want a distraction. There was an aching in my heart and mind. There was an answer I'd been trying to find. I guess the core of the question I was asking is there anything lasting? I know there is, but I couldn't see it through my clouded eyes. The time's still going by. And I'm meeting, I see it, and I resign. I confess I lie. For the first time in my life, I'm lonely. I feel like no one really knows me. See, I sleep in a box by the ocean, and I study its motions. I wanna move. You see, a lot of good has come my way, and even love invited. And I smiled and said I could not impose. Hope the door's not closed forever. I know it's not, but I can see it through my clouded eyes. The times are still going by. Yeah. And I need it, and I see it, and I resign. I confess I lied. Now that I've confessed, I'm for the first time in my life, I'm happy.
Tone Deaf is Kingston's annual festival of adventurous musical performance. Check out Toronto's post-punk duo Ice Cream live at Musiki's September 24th with Kingston's own musical sensation, Conique. This pre-festival event features a silent auction where you can bid on rare collectible vinyl and artwork. Plus, you'll have the limited opportunity to purchase the esteemed Tone Deaf Festival Pass so you can see all 7 fall Tone Deaf shows for only $35. Toronto's Ice Cream live at Musiki, 73 Brock Street, 7 p.m. Saturday, September 24th.
All right, listeners, I hope you're doing okay. You just heard a great wrap-up from Final Straw about the nationwide, and in fact it's starting to become worldwide, strike of prisoners against prison slavery for freedom. That was great, especially the Johnny Cash mashup. We also heard some music there by your boy Tony Braxton. That's Shad's new project. We're going to hear some slightly strange music in the background here by Outer World from Montreal as I talk a little bit about why we're doing this, why is it important. for CFRC to be talking about this, and CPR, CFRC's prison radio show. And we've been trying to signal boost this as much to our listeners, both outside and behind prison walls here in the Kingston area. This strike is a really big deal. 40 prisons in 24 states have been on strike. It was reported really widely in The Root, The Nation, Guardian, Wired Magazine, the magazine Waging Nonviolence, the Russian Russia Times, RT is what it calls now, which is in some ways a state apparatus of the Russian Commonwealth. But anyway, also happens to do a lot of very good reporting on stuff that, as long as it doesn't deal with Russia, is really great. They did a long piece about the strike as well. But I was just reading on this website called Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, also known as Faring, fair.org. They were doing a story about it. And they searched the Nexus News database for the terms prison and strike, showed that most of the national corporate news outlets thought that the potential of history being made on September 9th, and you heard the Final Straw update, it's the biggest strike in prisons in history, showed little to no news coverage. Apparently on September 9th, CBS News, or Money Watch, not even News Watch, actually had a substantive report by Amy Peachy, who noted that aside from the lower non-existent pay, the strikers say they object to the use of violence or punishments if they don't perform as well as their jailers expect. And she actually quoted a statement from the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, who 2 weeks ago we aired an interview and content about them, and you can check out Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, they have more information, quoted them saying, "Overseers watch our every move, and if we do not perform our appointed tasks to their liking, we are punished. They may have replaced the whip with pepper spray, but many of the other torments remain. Isolation, restraint, positions, stripping off our clothes, and investigating our bodies as though we are animals." Keep in mind, I found examples as late as the 40s of prisoners being beaten in Canada for refusing to do work, and certainly at places like Burwash, that was very common. But again, according to FAIR, other national news outlets, including ABC and NBC, Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, PBS, and NPR, and major newspapers like the New York Times, the Washington Post, USA Today, offered no coverage of the strike at all. They haven't updated this story since, so there may have been stories. I haven't seen much. I know Democracy Now! Did, but it's not really fit in with those other ones. They did appear in some local newspapers, the Philadelphia Inquirer, Miami Herald, Montgomery Advertiser, Birmingham News. We haven't had much about it in Canada, clearly. When we had federal strikes here, I think CBC reported on it, and then that was about it, in dead silence. Outlets that covered the strike, they tended to note that inmates sought improved prison conditions. Temperatures in Texas prisons have been known to reach 150 degrees Fahrenheit, which is what The Nation reported. While in other states, inmates are forced to work at recycling facilities and fight fires while receiving little to no pay. The Waging Nonviolence story talked about that. Some reports pointed out that because the 13th, sorry, I got that wrong, it's the 13th Amendment, not the 14th Amendment. It is a literal continuation of the antebellum slave system. And then Wired also talked about the issues with using prison labor. And it's worth pointing out that the Wall Street Journal did eventually run a piece a couple of days ago. And, of course, people like us and other magazines and news shows and radio stations that are cued into this issue and to this campaign have been covering it a little more thoroughly, ourselves included here. The Intercept published a piece, which I don't really like The Intercept. It feels a lot of times like it's Glenn Greenwald just bragging about how great he is. And, you know, I have my own issues with Snowden. But anyway, they did a good, great piece I might read from later that was just put out a couple of days ago as it entered its second week. Right now, though, I want to air a little bit more audio just to signal boost. One of them I got off of globaljusticeecology.org, who were allied to a group called the Campaign to Fight Toxic Prisons, who were organizing in Florida in solidarity with the IWW Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, which we've mentioned before. They were specifically spreading the word because their action in Florida was based around the Federal Correctional Complex, the FCC, in Coleman, Florida, which is, in Wildwood, Florida, near Coleman, it is one of the largest prison factories in the United States, producing material goods for government agencies nationwide. Much of the very furniture, which accommodates the offices of federal government bureaucrats and politicians, is made by prison slaves at that facility. And it's also no coincidence that FCC Coleman is important. It's surrounded by a vast wasteland of rock mining operations, an industrial activity with a record of creating giant toxic ponds across Florida, and is a very important industry as well. And no one likes digging out stones, but it's the traditional prison work since they opened 200 years ago. And in fact, one of the reasons why they're organizing there, too, is because the Federal Bureau of Prisons in the States is proposing to build a new maximum security prison in Letcher County, Kentucky, which will also be using a strip mine. It'll be sitting on top of a strip mine, which can't be good for anybody who works there or is involved. So they did a little protest and strike and demo, and we're going to hear that right now here on CFRC, on CPR, your prison radio program. So this happened, again, on September 9th. I'm going to air this audio right now. They were carrying around IWW banners and protesting at this prison halfway between Orlando and Tampa.
A mother, a father, a brother, a sister, someone who has been in these prisons and it has not helped them, or maybe even you. Or maybe you got to skirt away from it. And now, because you need a job, you're doing this. You need to walk away from things that don't work. You need to stop, and you're a part of the solution if you actually stop keeping this going. All the prisoners in there are not being rehabbed. They are not getting the justice that they need to be the people that they want to be outside of these walls. They deserve liberation. Leonard Peltier has been incarcerated for 39 years of his life, innocently! How many innocent people are in there? And how many people will not ever, ever have a chance to be the people that they can be? It's your fault!
Amen!
40 years is gonna be next year, everybody. 40 fucking years, and he's one of millions of people. Modern day slavery, doesn't it feel terrible to be a part of it? We're gonna do a chant. We're gonna say fire to the prisons, and then at the end, it's gonna be for the class war makes us strong. To the tune of Solidarity Forever. Fire, fire to the prisons! Fire, fire to the prisons! Fire, fire to the prisons! For the class war makes us strong! Fire, fire to the prisons! Fire, fire to the prisons! Fire, fire to the prisons! For the class war makes us strong! Again! Fire, fire to the
So that was a protest that happened in Florida around this strike. So they were organized as part of the IWW and its outreach program to unionize prison laborers. This is pretty raw audio, raw emotions, so I'm sorry about the F-bomb that got its way in there. People's feelings are running high, both inside and outside of prisons in the United States, clearly. I also wanted to air a piece that's kind of video footage and audio from a rally that actually happened in Washington, D.C., that was recorded by a guy named Steve Alquist, who tends to record a lot of this kind of stuff. There's not much about him. And if we have time, I'm going to actually air a piece that was run on Democracy Now! We're one of their syndicate programs, so I don't think they'll object to me rebroadcasting that specific segment here on CPR. They do really good stuff, and they actually dedicated about a quarter of an hour to it. So let's hear this piece right now. Again, I just want to warn our listeners in CPR, this is raw emotions. People their tempers and their energies are up. So there might be a couple of inappropriate words here and there. So I'm just trying to give you a warning here. And all right, again, this is from Washington, D.C., I believe. Well, we'll hear. Providence. It's in Rhode Island. Anyway, a lot of IWW banners there, too.
One of the biggest shopping centers of Rhode Island, right?
Bullshit.
Straight up bullshit.
Yeah! I get thrown out all the time.
So not only do people get thrown out all the time just for being in there when they have no homes, when they have no other place to go, for recreation, for safety, they actually get chased by the police and by the security members in there, right? And they get the cops called on them. And what happens to them afterward? They get sent to the court, and then they get processed through the prison system. Last year, there was a security guard here who chased people, or who chased a woman, and who jumped to her death because she was too afraid to stop. And then they blamed it on her. We know what this is about. This is about gaining profit. A site like this is about profit. This whole mall exists for profit, and the likes of Victoria's Secret, the likes of every other retail outlet here, they sell prison labor. They sell products made by prison labor. And so not only is there a strike going on in the prisons, what the people inside have asked of us outside, we're not in chains quite yet, we certainly are figuratively, but what they've asked of us is to do things like this, to hold, to put pressure on the corporations and do public education around the fact that the wealth generated through sites like this mall right here is built on the backs of prisoners.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
The low wages that you get as a worker for any of these retail locations, it's supported by prison labor. You're getting paid $8, $9, $10 an hour because there's somebody working cheaper.
Yep.
And so to that, we say, fuck that.
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 We won't stop until all are free. We won't stop until all are free.
We won't stop until all are free.
We won't stop until all are free.
We won't stop until all are free.
We won't stop until all are free.
We won't stop until all are free.
We won't stop until all are free. The cop just a few seconds ago warned me that he will arrest me if we don't keep on moving in a few seconds.
Ow.
So what do y'all want to do?
How about the guy with the cop dispenser like that?
We could just chill here for a bit more and keep the pressure on them and refuse.
Are they going to arrest us all?
Do you think that they're going to arrest us all?
I would say probably may. Yes, I don't give a fuck.
Mic check! This is an ass.
So that's a very heated rally that happened a couple of days ago last week in Providence, Rhode Island. Again, I did warn you about some of the more heated language of these rallies. People's tempers are up, and and good reason. I don't want to disqualify it. I think that lays out some of the interconnected issues that maybe we haven't touched on as much in CPR and why this is such an important issue. I wanted to air two more pieces quickly. We're going to do one by Occupy. So they're still around, which you may not have realized. They've aired a quick piece on why this national prison strike matters. So let's get another perspective on this from a different organization. Again, just in case, there's probably going to be maybe some language that's a little incendiary one way or the other. So if, I guess you don't like it, turn it off until 8, and then Chris Eckhart will be on here with Hillbilly Swing. You will love that. Trust me, you will love it. It's a great show. But here, this is Occupy, the National Prison Strike in the U.S., and why it matters to you.
Friday, September 9th, marks the 45-year anniversary of the prison uprising at Attica Prison in New York. On September 9, 1971, prisoners at Attica took control of the prison, holding 42 officers and civilians hostage, demanding that their list of demands, known as the Attica Liberation Faction Manifesto of Demands, be met before they would agree to surrender. Among the 27 demands, protesters called for basic rights and better living conditions, including better medical treatment, fair visitation rights, and an end to physical brutality at the hands of the guards. None of the demands were met. Negotiations fell apart, and on September 13th, state troopers launched tear gas and opened fire on the prison yard for a solid 2 minutes, resulting in the deaths of several hostages and inmates. By the end of the firefight and the retake of the prison, 9 hostages and 29 inmates had been killed, including 21-year-old Elliot James L.D. Barkley, who at the time of the uprising was only days away from his release. Barkley's eloquent words on the prison uprising seemed to not only echo from the disgraceful days of slavery, but also prophetically pinpoint a fight that is still ongoing. "We are men. We are not beasts, and we do not intend to be beaten or driven as such. The entire prison populace, that means each and every one of us here, have set forth to change forever the ruthless brutalization and disregard for the lives of the prisoners here and throughout the United States. What has happened here is but the sound before the fury of those who are oppressed. We will not compromise on any terms except those terms that are agreeable to us. We have called upon all the conscientious citizens of America to assist us in putting an end to this situation that threatens the lives of not only us, but of each and every one of you as well." In the spirit of his words, this Friday, prisoners across the U.S. will participate in coordinated protests under the banner "A Call to Action Against Slavery," consisting of work stoppage, hunger strikes, and the peaceful refusal to take orders. The strikes will focus on the widespread exploitation of prisoners, a form of modern-day slavery.
All right, so I'm not going to air more of that. I'm kind of out of time for it. So we're going to do one more piece, and it's probably the biggest voice in one of our programs here that runs stuff to end CPR for tonight. We're going to hear from Democracy Now. We've heard some protest stuff. We've heard Occupy echoing this. We've heard The Final Straw talking about it. Again, I'm sorry for a few of the swears that found their way in there, but as I said, this is a very a sensitive issue in some way. The truth is, I mean, it seems like a lot of people aren't paying any attention at all in the States, and we're trying to amplify this message and get this story out. So we're going to hear from Democracy Now! In just a bit. Remember, this is CPR. Next week, we're going to do Calls from Home. So if you want to get messages or letters of support or a song request out there, if you have a loved one behind prison bars in the Kingston area, if you have something that you want to take care of in that way, you know, get a poem out, you can write to us. CPR, care of CFRC, Lower Crothers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario, K7L3N6. You can write to us via email at cfrcprisonradio@riseup.net. And you can send us a Facebook message on Calls from Home if you have access to the Facebook feed that we have. I'm just also looking up some notes that I wanted to mention very briefly about events going on in town. We're going to talk about more of this coming up probably next week as well, because, you know, that's what I'm doing. But so this weekend, September 24th, Rena Katz is holding a ceremony at KP and P4W. It's dawn on Sunday in the P4W grounds called Queer Ecologies. I think it's going to be really interesting, but it's going to be early. The city of Kingston is also holding a design charade, focus groups, and an open house in October to finalize plans for the former KP site. We'll talk about that more. I'm going to try to get somebody to that event on the 24th September, dawn on a Sunday. I'll probably be somewhere else that day working at undisclosed locations. But anyway, that's it for tonight. Let's hear some Democracy Now! Right now. You may have heard this already, but I'm guessing some of our listeners don't regularly tune in at noontime for whatever reason. So here is Democracy Now! Talking about the prison strike going on in the United States at this very moment.
Well, today, prisoners in at least 24 states are set to participate in a nationally coordinated strike that comes on the 45th anniversary of the prison uprising at Attica. Much like the prisoners who took over New York's infamous correctional facility in 1971, today's prisoners are protesting long-term isolation, inadequate health care, overcrowding, violent attacks, and slave labor. Today's actions follow similar protests earlier this year. In March, thousands in Michigan prisons launched a hunger strike after private vendor Aramac Corporation, Correctional Services, served them unrefrigerated meat, and then the company called Trinity that was brought in to replace them served small portions of watery food. The same company prompted protests in Georgia when it underfed prisoners to the point that one resorted to eating toothpaste.
In May, men in several Alabama prisons began a 10-day strike on International Workers' Day over unpaid labor and poor conditions. Organizers said guards retaliated by serving meals that are significantly smaller than usual, a practice they call bird feeding, and by putting the facilities on lockdown, partially to allow guards to perform jobs normally carried out by prisoners. During the strike, Democracy Now! Spoke with Kinetic Justice, who joined us by phone from Solitary Confinement and Holman Correctional Facility, co-founder of the Free Alabama Movement, one of the organizers of today's strike as well. He was serving his 28th month in solitary for organizing a similar protest in 2014.
These strikes are our methods for challenging mass incarceration. As we understand that the prison system is a continuation of the slave system, and which in all instances is an economical system. Therefore, for the reform and changes that we've been fighting for in Alabama, we've tried petitioning through the courts. We've tried to get in touch with legislators and so forth, and we haven't had any recourse. Therefore, we understood that our incarceration was pretty much about our labor and the money that was being generated through the prison system. Therefore, we began organizing around our labor and used it as a means and a method in order to bring about reform in the Alabama prison system.
That was Kinetic Justice speaking by phone from Solitary Confinement and Holman Correctional Facility in Alabama in May. Well, prisoners striking today say conditions are not much different from those that prompted the largest prison rebellion, one of the largest prison rebellions, 45 years ago at Attica. It was September 9, 1971, when state police raided the upstate New York prison, ending a protest against racism, officer beatings, rancid food, no rehabilitation programs, and forced labor. Before 4 days, the unarmed prisoners held 39 prison guards as hostages. On September 13th, then New York Governor Nelson Rockefeller ordered armed state troopers to raid the prison. Troopers then shot indiscriminately more than 2,000 rounds. In the end, 39 men would die, including 29 prisoners and 10 guards.
Before we're joined by two guests, I want to turn to Attica prisoner Frank Big Black Smith. He died in 2004 at the age of 70. Big Black, as he was known, became a chief spokesperson of the prisoners during the uprising. In 2000, he and other prisoners won a $12 million agreement from the state of New York. During the uprising, he was forced to lie on a table while officers beat and burned him. He was also threatened with castration and death. This is an excerpt from the film Ghosts of Attica, a Lumiere production made by Court TV that features Frank Big Black Smith and the late Liz Fink, who served as the lead counsel for the former Attica prisoners. The first voice you hear is Big Black.
People laying all over now, all bleeding and bloody and stuff. You know, so everybody know now that it's real, that this is it. You know, they're here now. They're in the yard now. They got control.
State troopers just took their clubs and beat them down the stairs. Broke people's legs, hit them on the tibia and broke tibias. On their back, on their head, in their genitals, on their front. You know, wherever they could hit them, that's where they beat them.
I'm telling you, my name is being called. Where's Big Black? Where's Big Black? Get up, Black, get up. And he busted me with a nigger stick, pickaxe, and got a 38 in his hand. And I gets up, and he, bam, in my side, in my back, and made me run with my hand on my head over to the side. And before I got over there, two, three more correction officers with him now, and everybody's hitting me.
That was Attica prisoner Frank Big Black Smith. He became a chief spokesperson for the prisoners during the uprising. For more on Attica and its legacy, we're joined by two guests. David Rothenberg is with us, member of the Attica Observers Committee, one of the 35 people who was brought into Attica to negotiate on behalf of the prisoners. He went on to found the Fortune Society. And Heather Ann Thompson joins us, an American historian, author, activist, who's written an explosive new book. It's called Blood in the Water, the Attica Prison Uprising of 1971 and its legacy. She's professor of history at University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. Her book opens with an epigraph from Attica correction officer Edward Cunningham. He says, quote, "You have read in the paper all these years of the My Lai massacre. That was only 170-odd men. We are going to end up with 1,500 men here if things don't go right. At least 1,500. Heather Ann Thompson, explain why you begin with that.
Well, it's really important for folks to realize that this rebellion of nearly 1,300 men for basic human rights ends brutally when the state of New York retakes the prison. And even the hostages were at the end of this rebellion begging the governor not to come in with force and to do the right thing, improve conditions in the prison. And that quote and several others in the very beginning of the book really reflect the desire of all participants to come to a peaceful resolution and finally do something about the terrible conditions in Attica.
For so many years, that 39 number, 39 men dead, the state authorities said that the prisoners slit the throats of their hostages. That turned out not to be true in even one case. Were they all killed by the state troopers?
Yes. On the day of the retaking, every death was at the hands of trooper or correction officer bullets. And the state stood out and told the entire world that the prisoners had, in fact, killed the hostages. And that story had a devastating effect on the long-term, on the future of criminal justice policy in this country. It really fuels the engine of punitive policy. And to this day, citizens will tell you that the prisoners killed the hostages at Attica.
Well, one of the interesting things, this was at a period in American history when racial conflict was perhaps at its strongest, but yet Attica represented an interracial rebellion. There were white inmates and Latino inmates and African-American inmates who banded together. You tell the story of Sam Melville, the Weather Underground member who was in Attica at the time and participated in the rebellion. There were many Latinos. And in fact, when we were in the Young Lords, we actually had a Young Lords group in Attica prison.
Right.
And we had two of our members, Jose Fee Ortiz, who's a leader of the Young Lords, and then Jose Parrish, G.I., who had come out of Attica, who went up there as part of the negotiating committee. So this was really an example of a racial solidarity among an oppressed
group. Indeed. And that's why it was so threatening to the state. Somehow, you have 1,300 men who are otherwise divided by language or political persuasion or ethnicity or race, and they come together over the basic fundamental desire to be treated as human.
David Rothenberg, you were called in by the prisoners, one of 35 people, along with William Kunstler and others, the late, great lawyer. Talk about what your involvement was, why the prisoners you wanted you there, and what you found there.
Well, I had been—Fortune Society had just started, and we were a volunteer organization at the time, but we were in—I was in correspondence with Roger Champin and Herbert Blyden, two of the men who emerged as leaders. And we had a little simple newsletter which was banned, and we went to court and won. The federal courts ruled, Fortune versus McGinnis, who was the commissioner, that they had no right to censor the inmate reading material. So I think they thought that we were this powerful organization that could make changes. And when they took over and they asked—they didn't trust the state in the negotiation and the demands, they asked for a list of people to come in and act as observers, and my name was on the list. So I got a call from Arthur Reeve, who was an assemblyman from Buffalo, saying, will you come up to Attica? And I said, not alone. And two of the guys from Fortune, Kenny Jackson and Mel Rivers, we flew up into the yard.
And, David, the importance of having that group there, because in most prison uprisings, there are no outside witnesses. But here you had this group of people, and not just a Kunstler and you, but there were elected officials, Tom Wicker of the New York Times. There was a large group of people that went up there and actually then had a different version of events than the official version.
This was a politically sophisticated group of inmates, which is why the state thought that outside revolutionaries were igniting the trouble. What in fact caused the trouble is you can't put 2,000 people in cages, treat them brutally, and not think there's going to be repercussions. That's what happened at Attica.
Can you describe some of these pictures you brought in, and especially, as you know, because you're on WBAI in New York, speak for a radio audience, describe in detail.
This is the—that's Commissioner Russell Oswald meeting with some of the leaders. I recognize L.D. Barkley and Roger Champ and Herbert Blyden. That's people that I know. I think that's Flip Crowley there.
And another picture is prisoners naked in the yard.
This was horrible. They stripped everybody, and then they put when they brought them inside, they smacked them in their ankles and their knees and their testicles, so that it was brutal. It was, you know, they could have taken over the institution by gassing it, which they did. They didn't have to fire a bullet.
Frank Big Blacksmith, when he was laid out, described, they made him hold a football with his chin, laid out naked on a table as they beat him. Why the football?
It was there.
Heather Ann.
Well, it was there, and he was one of the players on a football team, and he had been targeted because the state accused him of having castrated a guard. So they tortured him to say that if he dropped that football, they were going to shoot him. And he had every reason to believe it, since he had just witnessed, over the course of 15 minutes, an utter massacre.
And Heather Ann Thompson, not only was the scandal of the actual massacre that occurred there at the rebellion itself, but then the cover-up afterward, if you would talk about your quest to find out what actually happened.
Well, so for 45 years, the majority of the records for Attica remain sealed by the state attorney general's office, or at least very difficult to get. And the reason is that for all of the death at Attica, no member of law enforcement was ever held responsible. So the book was the journey to figure out who had created so much trauma, what had happened in the governor's office to lead to this retaking, who were the members of law enforcement that not only shot their weapons, but indeed the highest levels of the state police, who worked very hard to tamper with evidence, to conceal evidence, and to protect their own. And that was a key journey for finding out that information.
And you traced the chain all the way up to Washington, D.C. and the White House, right?
Indeed. The story of Attica resonates nationally and internationally, both because it was televised and people cared very much what happened there, but also because at every level, for the next 45 years, from the lowest level workman's comp bureaucrat to the presidency of the United States, the Supreme Court, the Justice Department, everyone turned a blind eye to the torture that continued to go on behind the walls of Attica in the wake of the rebellion. And so that story is very important.
There are heroes in our book, and one of them is Malcolm Bell, who
Indeed.
Was a conservative Republican who was hired by the state to be an investigator, and he couldn't remain quiet because he saw the cover-up. And he emerges from your book as a really heroic figure.
Yes.
It changed his life because he discovered the truth.
There are a few heroes, and they really stand out. The coroner, who went public at great expense to himself to tell the world that, no, in fact, the prisoners hadn't killed the hostages, that it was trooper bullets. Malcolm Bell is a hero because he blew the whistle on the inside of the Attica investigation, that, in fact, they were not going to go after the police, no matter that all the deaths were at the police hands.
And what about that call you received from a clerk in Buffalo about this trove of documents?
Well, indeed. I'd been looking and looking for Attica documents, combing upstate New York, and happened upon a whole series of documents that happened to just be in a random room in a courthouse. And frankly, I don't think that they knew what was there. It was a wall full of Attica documents, and the most important in those were evidence from the state's own investigation, its own records about who had done what at Attica.
And we're going to talk about who did what after this break. We're speaking with Heather Ann Thompson, who wrote the book Blood in the Water, The Attica Prison Uprising of 1971 and Its Legacy. David Rothenberg with us, who is a fixture in New York, is a writer and a WBAI producer, the Pacifica radio station here in New York. At the time, though, in 1971, he was a member of the Attica Observers Committee, one of 35 people brought into Attica to negotiate on behalf of the prisoners. He's founder of the Fortune Society. Stay with us.